Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Super pass from Gibson Park to Hansen, which created the room for Sheehan, and Ireland are beginning to motor. Ryan Baird into lots of tacklers. Jack Conan tries to get it away. Sheehan! Oh, that is wonderful! That is wonderful! Jack Conan, the creator, Dan Sheehan finished like a winner. Ireland had their third try and more than one hand on this grand slam.
That's great to be reminded of that moment. Ireland's Dan Sheehan scoring his second try against England as we clinched the grand slam in Dublin last March. Well, now this new Netflix documentary promises to bring you behind the scenes of that victory, Six Nations Full Contact. It follows Ireland and the five other teams as they battled to win the world's oldest rugby competition. It's going to be released next Wednesday, but Murray Kinsler, rugby correspondent with the42.ie, and former Ireland hooker Bernard Jackman have both had a sneak preview and they're here now. You're very welcome. Yeah. Murray, is it any good?
There's really good bits and there's some bits that I found a bit more dull. I think you can see which teams gave really good access. The likes of Italy and Scotland, you really get the nitty gritty behind the scenes stuff that you're hoping for. Teams like Ireland, maybe not as much, and they had a bit of a battle there. But on the whole, I think it'll be really good, especially for non-rugby hardcore fans who are kind of coming fresh to it. It's almost an introductory series
to the sport
and what it is.
And often that's the ambition, isn't it, of these documentary series, is to recruit new fans.
That's the whole goal here. And they're hoping that it'll grow into a franchise. It'll attract more money for the sport, more fans, which indirectly will bring more money as well. And it's just the kind of first step of what will hopefully be a kind of long-running thing.
Yeah, it's just interesting, Bernard, you know, how these things are made. Like, it sounds as though Ireland wasn't maybe that happy about taking part in it, and you'd wonder why they did if they weren't willing to give the access.
They were contractually obliged. I think that was the problem, or the
forced.
Forced, yeah. I think the decision was made by people at the top, Six Nations. I think the contract was signed quite late. The players and the squads were only told quite late, and there was a bit of there was definitely a standoff. There was a standoff on limited access, and but it's so important. And I think the financial package wasn't massive either, and then I think the players got their back up saying, well, why are we given complete access for what in the overall scheme of things is a tiny amount of money? But the big picture is actually attracting new fans, and I think I saw a report from Ernest & Young where in the UK rugby is the fourth biggest sport in terms of engagement, but with Generation Z it's 28. You know, so Netflix with the audience they have, the power they have to get into people's homes or onto people's devices, and not just the current rugby fans but future rugby fans, it is an avenue to try and, I suppose, save the game or ideally grow the game, but it's really save it, because we need to make sure that the next generation become part of it. And these series before, so Drive to Survive is the same production company, and that's been a huge success, but they said it was the season 3 was the tipping point, you know what I mean? By that stage they'd built up enough, I suppose, personalities, characters, enough following that they actually kind of realised how to make it click. And then season 5, it was basically when Mercedes and Red Bull went neck to neck. They'll never have a season like that again. But the producer said that effectively the content should be so good, the people should be so interesting, that you don't need to know the sport to get hooked on it.
Right.
And I don't think rugby, this one here, this episode here, or this season, it didn't get enough of the characters that are in the game.
Okay.
And that's probably what's going to have to happen next.
But the truth of it is, it's not really made for someone like you, is it?
No.
Like, it's made for someone who's coming to it fresh.
Totally. And I'm going to be fascinated what the opinion of the non-rugby fans are about this.
And one of the things they do well, actually, is they really magnify the physicality element. It almost surprised me how much they go into it. They don't hold back from that or shirk from it. They actually almost celebrate it, how physical it is. They talk to family members who almost sometimes worry about what's going to happen to their loved ones and things like that. And you thought maybe they'll kind of try and dull that a bit and make sure that people aren't concerned by that aspect of rugby. But it is a unique part of rugby. It's one of the reasons we love it, is the physicality and that kind of gladiatorial element to it. And things like that are shown in their kind of truest form in this series.
Would you think that's overplayed? Like, it is called full contact, so it's all about, you know, listen to the crunch, you know, see it happening in front of you, look at how worried the families are. Is that too much?
No, it is quite visceral in it. It is at times, and yeah, maybe it's slightly overdone. You can see they edit things to make sure that it's really thrilling, and there's maybe juxtapositions that some people who are interviewed may not be completely happy with, but that is the aim for them. They've got to sell it. And you're so right about the new people coming to it. That is rugby's challenge, even in Ireland, you know, still the number four sport, even though it's professional, even though people can earn a big salary from it or a decent salary from it, it's still number four. And hopefully as this series grows and develops, you'll get more of those athletes who are thinking, you know, I might actually give this a go because I've seen behind the scenes, I've seen that it's quite an attractive career in some ways as well.
Just going back to the Irish rugby scene and media and exposure, you know, in terms of doing interviews, they're cagey, aren't they? Why is that?
Unbelievably cagey. It's just innate in the culture here. And having coached in France and seen how open it is, the comparison. So I went from playing in the Irish system with Leinster and Connacht, where everything was managed by a media officer. You're briefed before you went into a press conference around the three or four key points that you want to get across and don't stray away from that. And then I went to a club in the top 14 who basically have, over there you eat what you kill. So if they aren't open, if they aren't given sponsors, fans, media access, they're not going to get the column inches, the airtime on the radio that the other sports will. So, and they understand if they don't get that, they won't get the revenue in to keep the whole thing going. And it's completely different. And partly because of that, you see French rugby players holding their own with the soccer, with the NBA stars, etc., in French society, because they are personalities, they are characters, and they can the average fan or wannabe fan can feel that they understand that person, that person's history, his family background or whatever, because they hear about it, and then they may be more likely to go and follow him or her into a sporting event. So
I just wonder what do you think is the best way if you're at the top of your game.
Look, I think you can do both. I think you know the problem is we educate these players that they can only do one thing, play rugby, whereas I think they're well capable of being much more diverse in terms of their what they do and who they speak to, etc., and plan for the future, but also just develop their own character and personality by being able to sell themselves.
It's not going to suit everybody, Bernard. You know, there's some people who'd be really uncomfortable with that level of media exposure.
100%, and that's fine. Yeah. But let the people who are naturally comfortable with it. So someone like Simon Zeebo, like in some ways, it's a negative in Irish, in the rugby environment in Ireland that he is so open. You know, they see that as someone above
not themselves.
John Cooney's another fellow who's quite interesting on Instagram, helps people understand his mindset, etc. And you see people trying to knock that. Absolutely. You're not going to, I think 100% we need to protect everybody. And someone who's naturally shy should be allowed to be shy. But I'd be shocked if there wasn't more people in Irish rugby who have an interesting story to tell about themselves, but don't get the chance.
And one of the challenges of rugby is that it is such a sport where teamwork and being a good teammate and working hard and not talking above your station, those things are valued. And you get great lessons out of rugby, but it does sometimes dull the characters. I sense there's a bit of a shift. Interestingly enough, when you're in the Ireland setup, the guys that you want to see put up for press conferences, Mac Hansen, James Lowe, Finlay Beelam, all came from outside of Ireland to play for Ireland. They're real kind of vivacious characters. But the younger Irish guys now, I'm sensing, are just a little bit more open. They've grown up in a social media culture, it's a massive part of their lives. They're not as inward kind of focused. They're more out there and more willing to just speak their mind, I sense. More confident just in being in a kind of public setting, which is encouraging. And I hope they are encouraged to continue being themselves, not to dull that at all.
So this documentary series then, which of the Irish players stands out? Who do they focus on?
Andrew Porter is kind of the key guy that they focus on. He comes out of it really well. I spoke to him recently about it, and his view was, why not do this? Why not just be myself and give my story? And I don't think there's anyone who'll watch the episode with Andrew Porter not coming away having a bit more kind of grow towards him and a bit more kind of, I suppose, be more of a fan of him and look out for him next time that he's playing and appreciate what he does on the pitch, but also what he kind of goes through off the pitch to put himself in those positions. And I think other guys will see him benefiting from this massively, both in terms of his brand, for want of a better description, but also just that he had a good experience with it as well. And And I think that'll encourage them to maybe get involved in the future.
Like the shift to this sort of exposure model might be really difficult, you know, because there is a bit of a code of omerta about rugby in some respects, isn't there, Bernard? You'll know this from your time.
Yeah, there is. But and I think that was the big fear from the coaches was they don't want to give away any insights into what they see in Scotland, for example, or how they want to play against England. But actually, that's not what Netflix were looking for. They weren't looking for that at all. They were actually looking for the personalities, the characters, the emotion, the physicality. And I think, you know, going back to Murray's point around how obvious it was that they were chasing that. Like when you think back to the other series, the likes of the Tour de France series, it's the crashes, Drive to Survive, it's the danger. You know, they're the things that obviously work and sell. Mm-hmm. And they've tapped into that. But the Omerta side of things, I think it has become more open. It starts at the top. So Andy Farrell is a more open personality. He allows and embraces the fact that people need to be themselves. And that will start to drift down into not just the Irish squad, but back into the provinces. And probably someone we're going to talk about in a second, when Joe Schmidt, who's now been announced as Australia coach, his era here was more around, you know, say nothing, keep it in-house, a little more secrecy about what we do. And that there was longevity, and that takes a while to overturn that, to change that culture.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think he was so strong on that, Joe Schmidt?
Well, look, that's part of his strength, is his clarity around what he feels is the best model of creating a winning team. And it's very much, you have a clear sense of what your role is, you do it, you don't talk about it, there's no one bigger than the team, no stars, and that's what he's built his reputation. And he's one of the best coaches in the world, so there's nothing wrong with it. But in terms of creating engagement or personalities outside into the greater public, it's very hard to see them.
Yeah. So how do you feel about his appointment to Australia?
It's a big boost for Australia. Honestly, he's a brilliant coach. He's exactly what they need. They tried the Eddie Jones experiment. They wanted to get more column inches, front page, back page. It backfired completely. With Joe Schmidt, you're only going to get back page
that's the thing.
But more than likely, there'll be better results, better performances. And with the Lions Tour coming up there in 2025 and the World Cup 27, which he isn't contracted for yet, but I think he is the right person to get Australia back on the map.
Yeah, Murray, what's your feeling on it?
Perfect appointment for me. He said today himself that he's a pragmatist. He could even be characterised as boring in his own words in terms of how he is in front of the media, but he's perfect for what has been a bit of a rabble, ill-disciplined team, not cohesive at all. He'll get a really good system in place, and I've no doubt that come a line series against Andy Farrell's Ireland, his old kind of apprentice, that they'll be in really good working order. And that's a fascinating battle now for the next couple of years before that tour. Obviously, Farrell worked under him as an assistant coach since 2016, took over after the 2019 World Cup. And they coached against each other very recently in a World Cup quarterfinal when the All Blacks, with Joe Schmidt as an assistant coach, I would say outcoached Ireland. And he had a few little plays in there that you knew that was Joe Schmidt, who he picked out a weakness in Ireland, and he had a massive influence on that game. So it's going to be intriguing to see those two go up against each other.
But they won't have Netflix cameras in the Australia dressing room anytime soon.
No,
right?
No chance.
No, that's not going to happen.
But we will have another season two of Full Contact.
Oh, it's already been commissioned, has it?
Yeah, I think they're just waiting for the data for next week, but they've already started prepping for it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's out on Wednesday, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think on the 24th. It's called Full Contact on Netflix. Murray Kinsella and Bernard Jackman, thank you both for coming in. Back after this.